You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to the Kotke Ride Home for Tuesday, August 18th, 2020. I'm Jackson Bird. Yes, we are the Kotke Ride Home now. If you want more info on the name change, you can listen to yesterday's episode. But for today, we are debunking some misconceptions about women's suffrage on the 100th anniversary of American women gaining the right to vote, and also busting the myth of the lost colony. Facebook and NYU are trying to make MRIs better for patients using artificial intelligence, and a website that will replicate the white noise of your office. Here are some of the cool things from the news today. While medical discoveries and technologies are always evolving, those innovations don't always trickle down to the experience of the patient. One example, MRIs. While the technology has advanced over the years, for a patient undergoing an MRI, you still have to stay perfectly still in an intimidating tube for 20 minutes to over an hour. Well, scientists are trying to change that by using artificial intelligence to speed up the process. Quoting The Verge, the work is a collaborative project called Fast MRI between Facebook's AI research team, or FAIR, and radiologists at NYU Langone Health. Together, the scientists trained a machine learning model on pairs of low-resolution and high-resolution MRI scans, using this model to predict what final MRI scans look like just from a quarter of the usual input data. That means scans can be done faster, meaning less hassle for patients and quicker diagnoses. The reason artificial intelligence can be used to produce the same scans from less data is that the neural network has essentially learned an abstract idea of what a medical scan looks like by examining the training data. It then uses this to make a prediction about the final output. Think of it like an architect who's designed lots of banks over the years. They have an abstract idea of what a bank looks like, and so they can create a final blueprint faster. End quote. The technology has been in development for years, but the Fast MRI team is now publishing the results of an initial study in which they found that radiologists made the exact same assessments using traditional MRI scans and AI scans, which is, of course, crucial for proving the reliability of this model. And the best news? They think it can be incorporated into hospitals fairly quickly because the training data and model are open access and don't require any new hardware to incorporate into existing scanners. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. Corinne Schmooley, who heads the MRI research team at University College London and is not a part of the Fast MRI team, told The Verge that we are going to be seeing a lot more AI in medical imaging in the future. Today marks 100 years since the ratification of the 19th Amendment of the United States Constitution granting women the right to vote. At least some women, in theory. And to mark this anniversary, I thought that it would be appropriate to dive into some of the myths surrounding women's suffrage here in the U.S., beginning with the idea that the 19th Amendment really did give all women access to voting. So because the original Constitution doesn't actually mention voting, and the 19th Amendment, as well as the 15th, just say what states can't do with regards to voting, that is, not deny or abridge the right to vote to citizens on the basis of sex, that's the 19th Amendment, or race, color, or previous servitude, the 15th, that meant that states got creative in how they could prevent people, namely women and people of color, from voting. Methods that didn't explicitly prohibit them on the basis of sex or race, but sure as heck made it harder for people from those populations. These methods included literacy tests, poll taxes, and quoting time. Violence and intimidation, especially lynchings, also kept people away from the polls. Some registrars even flat-out refused to process the papers, or handed black women a blank sheet of paper. The same methods of disenfranchisement also held back Latinas from voting in the South, and at the time, laws like the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882 and the Immigration Acts of 1917 and 1924 blocked Asian immigrants from citizenship, and therefore from voting. And even though Native American voting rights activist Gertrude Simmons Bonin, also known as Zitkala Saw, lobbied for the Indian Citizenship Act of 1924, which allowed more Native Americans to vote, some Western states didn't grant Native Americans the right to vote until 1948, Arizona and New Mexico, and 1957, Utah. The Voting Rights Act of 1965 would eliminate many of the obstacles women of color faced voting, but the Supreme Court in 2013 invalidated part of the law's federal oversight of state obstacles to voting rights. Voting rights activists and policymakers continue to call for updates to strengthen it. End quote. But the thing is, while there were so many women who still couldn't vote after the amendment was ratified in 1920, there were actually plenty who could vote before 1920. 18 U.S. states allowed women, white and black, to vote in all elections before 1920, and another 22 states allowed women to vote in some elections, but not all. The Wyoming Territory was the first to pass women's suffrage all the way back in 1869. This decision actually threatened their chances of statehood, but Wyoming Territory officials told the U.S. Congress, quote, "We will remain out of the Union 100 years rather than come in without the women." End quote. You know, despite many of our whitewashed machismo tales of the West, it was actually an incredibly diverse and progressive place in many ways. Plenty of black people, immigrants, and queer people found solace and relative freedom in the open lands and lack of dense urban social pressures. So it's not entirely surprising that several states and territories in the West fought for and achieved women's suffrage 50 years before the nation as a whole. And women in the West weren't just voting, they were running for office. Before 1920, over 3,500 women had run for political office, many of them from Western states and territories. Over 750 women were elected to public office before 1912 in Kansas alone. It is also important to note that women often voted as active members of their communities in the colonies prior to the American Revolution. And, of course, indigenous women had political power in their nations for centuries. Sally Roche Wagner, historian and editor of the 2019 anthology, The Women's Suffrage Movement, told Time, quote, "Women's rights is not a new concept on this land. It's a very, very old one. And the clan mothers of the Six Nations of the Iroquois Confederacy, the Haudenosaunee women, have had political voice for 1,000 years, end quote. Indigenous women, black women, and other women of color played key roles in the suffragette movement, even if they aren't celebrated or acknowledged in many of our mainstream histories. Quoting Time, as historian Martha S. Jones told Time recently, black suffragists and other women of color were not always at or even invited to white suffragists' events. So finding their stories requires researching the events they held instead. Many of them were not even cataloged as relating to the suffrage movement. Many suffragists of color were left out of what's long been considered the definitive history of the 19th century movement, the 6-volume series called History of Woman Suffrage, published between 1881 and 1922 and spanning more than 5,700 pages, it features profiles of women who paid for their portraits to be in the book. End quote. Yeah, suffragists like Susan B. Anthony literally paid to be included in the text we've mainly relied on for the last century. So if you want to learn more about the crucial roles played by women of color in the suffragette movement, the New York Times has a great visual history of the movement on their site today, and the staff writers behind that piece also put together an illustrated book out today called Finish the Fight, The Brave and Revolutionary Women Who Fought for the Right to Vote. And there's actually a theatrical adaptation of that book premiering on the New York Times' YouTube channel at 7 p.m. Eastern tonight. Among others, it features Zitkala Saw, as well as Mabel Ping Hua Lee, a Chinese suffragist, Jovita Idar, a journalist and activist who fought on behalf of Mexican Americans and women, and Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, an African American abolitionist who helped to establish the National Association of Colored Women. And the last point I will add is that women's suffrage was not just about gaining the right to vote, but rather, quoting the New York Times, a fundamental reimagining of the roles of women in American society, not as dependents of men, but as full citizens, end quote. And some related issues that they fought for included dress reform, control over one's body, rights and protections for people of their race and background, and for many, temperance, because abuse of alcohol was seen as a primary cause of domestic violence. So we have a lot to thank them for. Quoting the New York Times, 100 years after millions of American women cast their first ballots, 26 women are serving in the Senate, another 101 are representatives in the House, women are governors of 9 states as well as the territories of Puerto Rico and Guam, 4 serve as congressional delegates for American Samoa, the Virgin Islands, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. There is still progress to be made, but all of this would be unimaginable if women had not won the vote. End quote. You may be familiar with the legend of the Lost Colony, the 100-some-odd English colonists left in Roanoke in 1587 and who seemingly disappeared, with the only trace of evidence being the word Croatoan carved into one of their abandoned structures. Well, researcher Scott Dawson believes that he has solved the mystery and that the whole thing was blown out of proportion from the beginning. Using the original writings of the Lost Colony's governor, John White, who returned to England for more supplies just days after arriving in Roanoke and then returned 3 years later to find the colonists, including his own family, gone, as well as the addition of thousands of artifacts uncovered on Croatoan Island, now called Hatteras Island, Dawson has written a new book called The Lost Colony and Hatteras Island, in which he outlines his stance that, quote, "They were never lost. It was made up. The mystery is over," end quote. Dawson points out that the colonists literally left White a sign, as they had previously discussed together. Before he left, they decided that if the colonists needed to relocate, they should leave a record somewhere of where they went, and if they went under duress, they should leave a cross under the name of the location. In 2 places, the colonists wrote Croatoan, the name of the neighboring Native American nation, and neither of them included a cross. So why was there ever a mystery in the first place? Well, John White wasn't actually able to ever verify that they did indeed relocate to Hatteras Island with the Croatoans, or that they survived there if they did. When he returned to Roanoke 3 years later and saw the signs that they had left, he wasn't able to make it over to Croatoan Island. A snapped anchor cable, bad weather, and a slew of other issues prevented him from sailing to the island to investigate before having to return to England. But Dawson and the archaeological teams he's worked with over the years believe they've found mounting evidence that the colonists and the Croatoans lived amicably side by side for years. Quoting the Virginian Pilot, "The evidence shows the colony left Roanoke Island with the friendly Croatoans to settle on Hatteras Island. They thrived, ate well, had mixed families, and endured for generations. More than a century later, explorer John Lawson found natives with blue eyes who recounted they had ancestors who could speak out of a book," Lawson wrote. "The two cultures adapted English earrings into fish hooks and gun barrels into sharp-ended tubes to tap tar from trees. The archaeologists also found round post holes where Indians built their longhouses 25 feet to 60 feet long, and they uncovered square post holes made by English during the same period. They were in the Indian village surrounded by longhouses," Dawson said. "Bones of turtle, wild fowl, and deer bones indicate good eating. Pig's teeth turn up for generations. They never had to eat the last pig," Dawson said, end quote. The Croatoans and the colonists did seem to have a good relationship, bound by a distrust of another tribe, the Secatans, who had previously enslaved the Croatoans and also killed one of the colonists. Although, to be fair, in classic colonizer behavior, the English had killed the Secatan chief and burned a Secatan village. Still, the Croatoans helped them with those acts, and it seems wanted to keep the colonists safe from the Secatans when Governor White left, which may be why they allowed them to live in their village on the island with them. In explaining his theory, Dawson says, quote, "You're robbing an entire nation of people of their history by pretending Croatoan is a mystery on a tree. These were a people that mattered a lot. End quote. If you used to work in an office and are still working remotely, you've probably identified various pros and cons for you personally. You know, maybe you enjoy the freedom, but miss seeing people other than those you live with every day. Maybe you miss some of the office amenities that your house lacks, like free printing. Or maybe you just miss the general vibe of the office. If that last one resonates with you in any way, you may be interested in the website Sound of Colleagues, which replicates the background noise of an office, complete with keyboards clacking, phones ringing, the coffee pot gurgling, and more. Each sound can be turned up or down or off entirely, like maybe you don't want an open window or an office dog, but maybe you really do want to hear the room tone. It sounds a little ridiculous, but trust me, when you turn it on, it is strangely calming and a bit wistful. Sound of Colleagues is a product of sound designers Red Pipe Studio and design and communications company Familjen, which is Swedish. You can also listen as a 10-track album they produced on Spotify, which themes songs by era, like the 90s or the 60s, by type of office, like small office next to a lush garden, and by experience, like annoying colleague and a surprised reaction. But the recorded Spotify version does lack the ability to customize each isolated sound. So while it's pretty interesting, it's not as effective as background noise. It's a bit more overbearing versus the comparatively gentle website. And going along with the joke of using this site to recreate an authentic office experience, Reddit user DiffCalculus offered to send people emails throughout the day with quick question in the subject line and a deep, difficult conflict in the email body. The offer made me laugh, but sadly that is one part of the office experience that is still around and has maybe even gotten worse. But if you are getting too many quick question emails or just need to chill out and focus for any other reason, check out soundofcolleagues.com. That is all for today. This show was produced by Ride Home Media and Kaki.org. I am Jackson Bird. I hope you all have a good rest of your day, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
This Valentine's Day, Dunkin's got the perfect pairings to show your love. So get down on one knee with a dozen brownie batter donuts and a cocoa mocha signature latte. Or make them swoon with a strawberry dragon fruit Dunkin' refresher with a Cupid's Choice donut. Are you ready for love? America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.